So they added Balatro to Mahjong Soul.
What? Wait, but aren't they also adding other things to Balatro? What's happening?
Oh, they didn't add actual Balatro to it. It's just like a
Balatro-esque
mode. It's like a Balatro-esque mode where you have, you know, talismans that increase your poor connection. Okay, sure.
And it's like roguelike style?
Yeah, kind of. So you like, and then you can just like discard your tiles. So that's been my latest pilgrimage. Oops, I forgot to do
that. Yeah, it's like a bad combination for you, huh?
These things only last like 10 rounds, and I only do one a day.
Okay. That's pretty reasonable.
You spend money to increase the amount of fucking, what are they called? Open tiles and Dora, right?
Sure.
If you don't play Mahjong, I'm sorry for this introduction, but I thought it would be really funny, given our interests, to point out that they added a temporary Balatro event. And I guess I'm just going to have to play this round out now that I showed it. Hold on. There's a four. I'm in 10-5. I'm waiting for a... Let's see. There's a three and a six, and one of the three is already revealed down there, so we're just going to...
Okay, but did you see the actual Balatro crossover announcement?
Yeah, those are cool. It made me want to play more Dave the Diver again, yeah. Which I'm doing.
Incredible set of, like, Balatro's being crossed over with The Witcher, Among Us, Vampire Survivors, and Dave the Diver, which is...
Oh, it was The Witcher, right. Okay.
An interesting assortment.
That's great. Are you kidding me? I don't know why The Witcher, but I don't really care either way. I think that's really fun. I don't think this
matters. CD Projekt knows how to get those deals done.
If CD Projekt... Well, they're surely working on... Oh, hell yeah, I win.
Nice,
because I have a special joker that when I'm one away from victory, if I call a four tile, if I call a con four tiles in a row, it transforms my next tile into the tile I need.
Wow, that's great.
Oh yeah, and then I also have another one that transforms the last tile into one of the tiles I need if I need it. And that's about it for me on my end. God damn it, I shouldn't have discarded that three. There was more like, threes.
Are these gonna have like themed jokers, like the Among Us?
I don't
Joker,
know.
Like...
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's going to be fun. I still haven't gotten any gold coins. Gold stakes yet, because we were playing... what were we doing? We were playing Final Fantasy 14 by the time I got there. And then all sorts of shit. We're going to talk about the rest of that sorts of shit on this episode, I think. Isn't that fun?
This is riveting radio.
Riveting radio. I'm going to open more tiles. Okay.
I think you need to close that tab.
I just closed it. We play a wacky god school administrator and develop a shitty curriculum in Two Point Campus.
Buds, a storm of buds, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Class is in session.
All students report to the scientific laboratorium.
If you'll see on the desk in front of you as you enter the room, there is a seating chart.
And at all of your seats are 500 cookies you must each eat.
Yes, absolutely. I am your teacher of light, Jerome Barbatsis, joined by my student co-teacher of light, Alexander Hambrock. He's here for one semester. He's got to design one unit. No, you're a student, not adjunct.
Student teacher, different
thing. Do you not know what you are?
Wait, I'm the student teacher?
Yeah, I just said that.
Sorry, student.
Yes, you should also... No, you should maybe reconsider the $20,000 of debt you're probably in right now at your graduate school.
Only $20,000?
If they didn't tell you that this was a student teaching program.
It's 2024, it's more than $20,000.
Oh, that's right. I went to graduate school and... When did I get? I think around 2013. So yeah, that was a lot back then. Holy shit! Yeah, I totally forgot that schools are even more expensive these
somehow.
Days. Wow.
Somehow.
I'm sorry for you kids out there. Welcome one, welcome all to this, the first episode of Back to School Storm Buds. We are covering, for the month of September, a bunch of games that take place in a school. And we've got a whole host of things to talk about today. We've got Two Point Campus to talk about today at the top of the episode. And we've got the first half of the first disc of Final Fantasy VIII in the latter half of the episode.
You know, I'll say this right now. We did pick a good direction for this month, but in hindsight, part of me is like, should we have done like... Number Munchers and Oregon Trail and like...
Absolutely not. Maybe next month when we can do subject matter. things. I thought about being like, we should play 1,000 times resist because math class. But I like this a little bit better. I suppose we should just get right into talking about Two Point Campus. Tell us a bit about who made this game, why they made it, and what the fuck it is.
Okay, so we're going to go for a little bit of a history lesson here, actually, because I think it's worth understanding where this game came from. It's kind of interesting. So Two Point Campus comes from Two Point Studios, a British game development company. But before that, we're going to go in the Wayback Machine, and we're going to go all the way back to the year 1993, where a different British video game studio named Bullfrog, who sharp-eared listeners might recognize as the studio of one Peter Molyneux, puts out a game called Theme Park.
Oh my god.
Theme Park is the first actual theme park management simulation game. It is like, it's like DOS graphics, right? It's very successful despite not being very good.
Hmm.
But Bullfrog follows up Theme Park with a game called Theme Hospital, which comes out in, I believe, 1997. It's called that because it's a sequel to Theme Park. That's why it's a Theme Hospital. Theme Hospital is a hospital management simulation game that ends up being kind of a cult hit. Like, there's a certain generation of PC gamer that has a lot of nostalgia for Theme Hospital. I know this because it's me. And, like, I played a lot of Theme Hospital when I was, like, 11. And It's a game that is known for its one. It's like you're laying out your hospital and installing all these rooms for these fictitious diseases. Like, people come in with big inflated heads and you got to like pop them. And it's got a very dry British sense of humor, right? It's kind of like, it's almost like a satire of like the NHS, like this sort of like, you know, incredibly like inefficient, difficult to wrangle, you know, hospital system with this layer of almost like prop comedy over the top of, or like slapstick over the top. And it's a big hit, and it's a game that it gets talked about a lot in terms, in like nostalgic terms, right? Like, oh man, Theme Hospital, wasn't that a good game? They don't make him like that anymore. So that's why Two Point Studios in 2018 releases Two Point Hospital, which is a game that is not just a hospital simulation game, but is very specifically like a spiritual remake of Theme Hospital. And then after that, they release, I think it's a couple years ago now, Two Point Campus, which we're talking about today. But all of this is why a lot of the interface of Two Point Campus feels like it comes out of a game from 1997, because it is.
Mm.
The ways that you lay rooms out, the ways that you place furniture, the ways that you manage your employees, huge chunks of this game are still basically just kind of like doing the Theme Hospital thing again, which just, I think, is useful context to explain why this game is what it is.
So as somebody who played Theme Hospital, does Two Point Campus do a good job of recapturing the nostalgia or the same success that Theme Hospital would have done, or Theme Hospital did for you as a kid?
On two layers, one sort of yes and one definitely not.
Okay.
On the sort of yes layer, mechanically, it's pretty close. I mean, again, like I said, like all the stuff is there, the way that you lay out rooms, the way that you populate furniture, mm-hmm. all that spot on. Definitely the fact that, like, there's more going on in this game. There's, like, there's course management, there's event management, there's requests from student. Like, they have put more stuff in the mix for you to be juggling at any one given time. But the game itself still feels a little thin in a way that, like, Theme Hospital, I suspect, was also actually pretty thin. But I was 11, and it was 1997. So there's, like, this game does capture a lot of what was mechanically, like, you know, enjoyable about that game. But it is, I don't know that it's really evolved it meaningfully so much as just kind of given you more plates to keep spinning in the air, which is enough for me to have had, like, a fun few hours with this game.
Yeah.
However, the humor is not good.
Woof. It's pretty rough stuff.
I'm sorry, but...
So the overall tone of this game is it's not Hollywood snark, but it is light smarm. There are subtle, very subtle, weak jabs at academia being a racket. There's a little bit of toilet humor. It is dry, but it is also it's also very repetitive. The announcer lady says the same two jokes over the course of, you know, your time in so many ways.
The radio DJ's jokes just are not funny.
Yeah, no, they're just they're something else. And the way in which the one particular joke that falls very, very flat for me, that it's a running gag, is the names of the courses. The names of the courses are parody names, of course, of real life. They're not. You're not just taking a science class. You're taking a science-onomy class, or your gastro. Is it gastromancy, or is it
something like
gastro,
that? Yeah,
something. There are all these very vague. Every single one of these is a very, very vague combination of two separate prefixes and suffixes that never get specific enough to be biting or funny or unexpected in any way. Maybe you could make an argument for virtual normalcy as opposed to virtual reality. Sometimes they'll just change one word out for another. And that's not funny, because I've taken like classes at the collegiate level. You're doing this. This is a college, right?
Yeah.
Classes at the collegiate level, they get really specific and they're weird. Like, you can make, they had, the world
You're
is
right.
their oyster.
This
they could have done
so
like,
funny.
Like, because I took a class that I eventually dropped out that was just like the history of the Crusades from whatever freaking perspective it was. Right? There's like, you could make up whatever historical event you want and then say the history of it. Like, let's make some up right now. Right. Let's or there's a, maybe literature, like epistolary literature from the future or something written by parrots. You know, there's something a little bit some more specific stuff. The text messages of Johnny, what's his ass? I don't know, man. And the teacher names are also basically. And you know how unfunny I am when I say things like Johnny, what's his ass? But wait until you meet Margaret Wretch, the science-onomy teacher. Wow, they really got us.
I mean, it's really like it's because the point is to have a big room you can plop down where what's supposed to be like a funny mechanical thing in the middle does a little animation while the kids are like learning how to cook an enormous hamburger.
And
whatever.
All the kids look like Wallace and Gromit at home. Everyone's got this orangutan like appearance.
They do look like an Aardman production character. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
but again, just it's unsettling at best. The building is just a grid, and it's not even like at the start you're pretty much just putting smaller grids within your grid, and then you don't really need to take up the rest of the space unless you want to keep playing on the level. I don't really see much of a reason to do that, because all you're doing is you're responding to some vague need that your kids have. There's no interface to be able to easily access what the kids need, so much as you have to kind of just click on the kids on the campus at random and see what they want, apart from like specifically sometimes they'll write in and say, hey, I want this coffee machine, and then you spend your money, your kudos cash, to unlock it. And then it's there, you put it down in the grid. There's not a whole lot. You could paint some of the furniture. That's about it for as far as campus customization. I would say that Final Fantasy XIV's housing is a better system than this.
I started to get into it as I played a bit more, in terms of just being like, oh, I'm going to build a student union. Oh, I want to put some posters on the wall, etc. I did enjoy that. The dormitory requirements appear to just be that you have a room with lots of beds in it.
Yeah, you don't have to. And it's like one bed per five kids. Like, okay, sure. It's pretty. It's all very unserious and very unchallenging. I've made
that's
it through
the thing.
About the first two levels of this. And I was like, all right, that's enough.
This is my problem, really. It's like, and I don't know if I just was worse at these games when I was younger or if they've gotten easier. But a major problem I have with a lot of these sort of Sim and Tycoon management games is that just they're way too easy.
This might be fine for a kid, maybe.
Yeah, but it's really easy to get on top of your problems.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, I don't know if I necessarily wanted this game to be super hard, to be frank, because then I would have just been like, what's the point? Like, there's nothing. I'm just gonna leave it at that. I don't know. It's not hard, but I don't know that I wanted it to be hard, or I just wanted it to be fun, and it wasn't that, because it was just make number go up, spend bit of number, and then number, like the return on investment was always there. There was never really any risk to the reward.
I mean, for it to work for you, and to be fair, I can see it kind of getting there for me if I put more time into it. For it to work for you, the bit you have to enjoy is kind of when you've got like a building fully built out and you've customized it a bit, and you're kind of just like enjoying watching it hum along a little bit. You just like the little diorama aspect of it, almost City Skyline style.
Yeah, but like this, just I think, including City Skylines 1, there are just better, more interesting options. I say I have more fun with this than I did with like Farming Simulator.
Agreed.
But it's not necessarily the make number go up that I really want in a game for me. So that's, it was an interesting, I would never have played this for myself on my own because I had no idea about the context, and I'm and that context does make the product a lot more interesting to me. I saw that as we were buying it, there were a lot of DLC packs. So they seem to be doing either
pretty
fine
well.
Or mm-hmm. like, I that's like...
A lot of people have nostalgia for Theme Hospital. That first game did very well, I think.
That's cool. I've never heard of it in my entire life. I've heard of Peter Molyneux. I'm assuming he's not part of this, but I don't know would have made a big difference. Isn't he coming out with that new Tales of Albion thing that's not set in the Fable universe?
Is he? My God, I don't know what that man's up to anymore.
Yeah, there's something about that at Gamescom. Man, Fable, what a series. The funniest thing is being able to kill your sister for a cool sword. Fable 1. Spoilers for Fable 1, by the way.
For that game from 2006.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man.
Earlier, maybe.
There's those games promised a lot, and I think the first one was like interesting, and then they kept promising a lot more than they were able to deliver. And to be fair, the technology wasn't there until Baldur's Gate 3. Really? So, yeah. Easy to look back and look down on Fable. But anyway,
Peter Molyneux, a man who undeniably a scam artist, but also one who appears to believe in the scams that he's running. So, yeah. You know, who could say if he's bad or not?
That's enough of a tangent on Peter Molyneux. That is going to do it for our thoughts on Two Point Campus. If that sounds interesting to you, if you need a really easy make number go up building / system management game, check it out. Why not? It's like $30. Maybe get it on sale.
I would say get it on sale, but I would say get it. It's. I'll say this. I'm more into this than some of the other management sims I've tried picking up recently.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, Farming Sim was a rough one. That one was real rough.
At least I'm not like fucking chopping wood in this one. I'm not being like, I gotta save up for the winter, make sure I stockpile enough wood.
That's not so bad. I don't mind that one too much. That kind of thing. The Valheim and V-Rising of it all. That's different, though. That's like survival. This isn't survival at all. This is just systems and numbers and
I was thinking
automation.
Stuff like Banished or like...
Banished.
What's that? Frostpunk?
Sure, why not? Yeah, I just think this is system heavier. I think of this more like I think an alternative to this would be more like Factorio.
Yes.
Cool. Well, we are, of course, going to do our usual thing. I am going to go practice my triple LUTs, and we'll be right back after the ad break.
We're gonna read some ads.
Big savings are here. Big savings are here. Big savings are here. It's the Labor Day sale at the Snack Attack Superstore. Bananas are 30% off. Cherries are 25% off. Raisin Bran is 15% off. All these deals and more are coming your way.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I've always wanted to eat Raisin Bran with cherries and bananas, but the ingredients have just been too expensive.
Well, not only are there crazy discounts, but also new financing plans are available. No money down.
I'm a child, and I love to eat bananas, Raisin Bran, and cherries. Watch me grab these. Oh, boy, I can't wait.
Oh, be careful. That shelf's pretty high. Do you need help from one of our store associates?
Whose child is this? Is there... excuse me. Do you know who your parents are? No. The only parents I need are bananas, cherries, and Raisin Bran.
Now over in this section, in the deli section, we're offering 75% off all Boar's Head meat products. Everything must go.
Yes. Hello, I am the deli man, Stanislav, and I am offering off 25% off of a Boar's Head for you this Labor Day.
That's right. Get that boar's head on the grill and roast it for some delicious boar's head stew. Everyone's favorite Labor Day treat.
Did I do it good?
You did great.
Great. When will I see my wife? Please, you promised.
And over in the frozen goods section...
No, please. No, don't take me back to the cutting room.
We have SpaceX-branded Rocket Pops, 85% off.
You can really taste the SpaceX.
Snack Attack is not liable for any chemical pollutants that may have gotten into the SpaceX brand Rocket Pops.
What was that?
Nothing. Enjoy the sweet treat.
Okay.
That's right. Walk on down to your Snack Attack supermarket and just peruse a variety of incredible savings, but only for 3 days only. 3 days only. 3 days only.
I'm kind of dizzy, but it's probably just my period.
Don't go get any lead tested for the next 14 days.
Okay, I won't.
Snack Attack Superstore. Attack your cravings today.
Well, that was fun. I am back from practice, from figure skating practice. Turns out...
Did the kung fu fight anyone?
I did not get to kung fu fight anyone. The rink closed at 7, and there's no ice anywhere, as it is the middle of August. So I just ended up kind of trying to do my triple lutz in the parking lot outside. I may no longer have ankles, but you know, we're not going to let that give us, we're not going to let that get us down. We're going to keep trying to get our triple lutz.
Did you not ruin your ice skates?
They're fine. It's the ankles.
It's really the ankles.
Those, yeah. They might heal if they decide to come back.
I mean, honestly, ice skating breaks my ankles even on ice. So, You know, you're ahead.
Yeah. Well, that's just, you know, we all know what the risks are when we sign up for parking lot ice skating. Okay, cool. Well, we're just about ready to talk about our long play of the month, the Squaresoft Classic Final Fantasy VIII. This is, of course, one of the trilogy of the so-called golden era of Squaresoft games, Final Fantasy VIII. This game came out in the year 1999, so...
And we're going to talk about how crazy that is.
A scant 4 years after Final Fantasy... Not Final Fantasy, Secret of Evermore, another game we just played last month. Go check those episodes out. And then, of course, I think just a year or two, maybe a year and a half after Final Fantasy VII came out, which, of course, so it's pretty wild to think about in terms of modern day video game development, the many, many years we typically have to wait between mainstay series franchise games. So
not just that the sequel came out that quickly, but also the technical leap. I mean, look, we're playing the remastered version, so I've seen the models look a bit better, some stuff's been cleaned up, but even still, I've gone back and looked at like the old stuff. The leap from 7 to this is wild.
It's pretty wild. Yeah, the models, they stopped being piles of circles and started being kind of lanky boxes instead, which is better. We've all seen the "You're the most handsome guy here" meme, I'm sure, and the thing about this remaster that everyone complained about when it first came out, and it's fair enough, is that because they lost a lot of the source code, they kind of had to grab assets indirectly from like the game and then reuse them. So there's a lot of artifacting on some of the backgrounds. If you want to see...
Oh, see, I kind of love it.
Yeah, but... it's fine, but like... because this game is... I mean, it's representative of how this game is made, and how it plays. But like, I think if you go back and look, especially at some of the images of like Timber and Balam Garden, those lines look a lot crisper in the background, even if some of the models don't look super great. Today we're talking about we're going to talk mostly. So this is our first episode on it. We're going to be talking about it for 5 weeks, but because it's the first episode. What we have to do, what I feel is important to do, is talk a lot about the systems, the early impressions, and a lot of the setting and like the characters we meet so far and things like that. Unless the recap stuff, and then the recap stuff will come as the weeks come by. There is a lot to recap, and there is a lot to talk about in terms of the systems of this game.
So before we get there, then, I want to say one other thing, kind of like from like a technical artistic perspective, that I think that this game has maybe the best use of this kind of like pre-rendered background style that I've ever seen. Like it is, I think it's actually like the ways in which they're playing with perspective and having characters run into and out of the frame, or the way that they're using the pre-rendered backgrounds to kind of like seamlessly create these cinematic setups in a way that later games that have to actually move a camera around mm-hmm. can end up feeling a bit clumsier about. Here, they just cut to the shot, and it's just the shot.
It was pretty revolutionary. 1999, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty freaking... It's 25 years ago. It was pretty freaking revolutionary for the time.
And some of the cutscene integration is really seamless also. Mm-hmm. Again, in a way that, I'm used to, up until recently, cutscenes kind of usually in most video games following the format of, like, and you run down the corridor, and there's a brief black screen, and then the cutscene starts playing. And in this, there's a lot of times...
Like a Resident Evil 1.
Yes. In this game, there are a lot of times where the cutscenes just seamlessly integrate, and, like, literally, it's like you just cut from a shot to the cutscene, or even like what you think is a pre-rendered background then seamlessly evolves into a cutscene in a way that, like, this whole thing feels really cohesive in a way I was not expecting.
I forgot to bring this up. Hold on.
If it's not clear, I'm digging this game.
You can take a... I brought out the CD jewel for this game, Final Fantasy VIII.
Wow.
Cool. This, I still have this from childhood. I still have this and the PS2, and it's totally playable. I'm choosing to play the remaster because I'm curious about it, and also because of the time... Because of the cheats, the three times thing, because I need that to draw a lot of magic. We'll get into what that means pretty shortly. Do you wanna read what it says on the back about the game? This is before the greatest hits version too. Like, I got this game really it's like soon as it came out.
A member of an elite military team, Squall is forced into a conflict beyond imagination. To survive, he must contend with a desperate rival, a powerful sorceress, and his own mysterious dreams. Features: realistic, detailed characters and background graphics enhanced by a breathtaking musical score. An epic story based on the theme of love, set in a massive new world. Based on the theme of love, okay. New jungle... We'll get to some of that stuff. New junction system allows characters to be customized with powerful magic spells drawn from enemies. Nearly an hour of stunning motion-captured CG cinema is seamlessly integrated into gameplay. They are correct. Those are seamlessly integrated.
Yeah, they're really good. Really cool stuff. You see a lot of the old cutscenes. I think one thing on my machine too with the remaster, I'm seeing a lot of kind of frame skipping that isn't there usually on the original. So that's a little unfortunate. In some of the cutscenes, but otherwise, it's a pretty fun time. So this game, it comes out so fast after Final Fantasy VII, and they're pushing so many boundaries with the way they approach character customization, stat spreads, and things like that. They are trying something with this aforementioned junction system that allows the player to effectively customize any of their party members to fulfill whichever role they want. There's not a whole... It's a similar style to Final Fantasy VII's Materia system, where but it is a lot less elegant.
It's really cool. It's very inelegant.
It's probably the most inelegant way in which any Final Fantasy has attempted to allow you to customize any characters like this. So
every time I think I got a handle on it, I'm like, wait, so I can slot magic into my stats, yes, or I can put it on my attacks?
Yes. Depending on which Guardian Force or multiple Guardian Forces you have junctioned to your person.
But there's no elemental resonance there, right? Like, if I have, like Shiva, I can still... If I've got Shiva and she's got, like, elemental defense up, I can still slot my fire spells into that to get, okay.
To give yourself fire defense, right? That's not necessarily an issue. So I guess, yeah, you're having a good time with this game. Talk to me about how you've been approaching, what your general strategy is for maybe, say, like, increasing your character's stats and progressing through the game in general.
Okay. Well, so... Because the other thing that I didn't catch on to until, like, a few hours in, also the enemy's level scale, right?
Yes, and they scale with your highest level character.
So, like, the only point to leveling then is to unlock abilities on your GFs, right?
Mm.
Is that an accurate way to...
I think so.
like, I guess, like, why else would I level up? Because, like,
yeah.
Okay. So, like, my general approach then is, like, if I'm having trouble with a fight, I will grind for, like, you know, 15 minutes. Like, because the other thing also, you level up fast in this game. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing also, is it's not hard to level up. It's like, at least even we're at the point we're at, it's like, I don't know, 4 or 5 encounters will get you there. So, like, I don't know. I got Quetzalcoatl on the lady with the nunchucks. I've renamed
we'll
everyone.
Get over the character. Of course, you can't
rename Selfie.
You can't rename Selfie. You can only name Squall and Renoa and all the GFs. I've just kept this time. I went default. I have never done that. So
I put Shiva on Zell, sure. And then on Squall, sure. Who I named Squall, but it's spelled SQOL.
Interesting.
I've got Ifrit, who I renamed to Ifriend, and Diablos.
You what?
Oh, God, he's here.
I've been here the whole time. I knew I was coming up. You renamed me.
He's no longer an enemy. Now he is companion.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. I'm down. Okay. All right. That's a good reason.
Anyway. I kept you the same, Ifrit.
Thank you.
And the other thing also is, like, with the exception of the boss battles, there appears to be no reason not to just use the GF summon to just obliterate all the mobs anytime you run into them.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. What if I told you that's all very wrong?
Okay. What should I be doing?
Well, this game is a solved problem, and there's a whole interlocking system. There's a whole way in which you can level up your character most efficiently without necessarily running into the issues that come with having one really, really overpowered character and then 5 shitty ones.
Okay.
When the levels seem. So
tell me more.
There's a whole party system, XP system, like Final Fantasy, classic Final Fantasy stuff. There's another thing that this game introduces, and it's something that is very prevalent also in Final Fantasy 14. If you were to have one guess, so what I'm about to say when it comes to things introduced in Final Fantasy 8.
The spell draw system?
What? That is in there. I mean, Gunbreaker exists.
Gunbreaker
is, of course, the Squall adjacent thing, and you can, like, Blood Feast to draw your charges, and it looks like the draw spell, which is really cool.
Oh, limit breaks.
No, that was in 7. Good guess.
Oh, okay.
It's Triple Triad.
Oh, Triple Triad. Wait, I'm sorry. Is Triple Triad have actual gameplay implications?
So, Triple Triad is essential to this game.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Triple Triad is the card game in Final Fantasy XIV. It is pretty much copied over from Final Fantasy VIII, except in Final Fantasy VIII, you play for Ante.
Yeah, you do.
You lose
sucks.
Your cards.
Oh, my God.
You get the Ifrit card, like, right away, and you can just bully everyone. And what you do... Now, of course, I mean, I don't know. This is just super obvious, right? What you're supposed to do is go into Quetzalcoatl, change what ability he learns, make the first thing he learns the card ability, assign the card ability to the person who has Quetzalcoatl Junction to him, turn every single enemy you encounter into a card so that you don't get experience for killing those cards, but you do get ability points for those cards, for those monsters. You're supposed to go down to the beach, kill a bunch of fish, get 6 ability points per 0 EXP for those fish on the beach so that you learn all of the spell refinement tools from your GFs. You go on, you take that summoning magic shit away because using your GF sucks ass. It takes forever. You learn all your spell refinement. You learn L riff, I riff, T riff, whatever, all the refinement spells, all the refinement stuff. And then you also learn card refinement. So that you refine your cards into items that you can refine into magic, and then you juncture that magic into the GFs so that your characters, and then you, of course, learn all of the junction stuff first, too. Fuck the summoning magic. Who cares about that? So then once you're done learning all the refinement, you learn all the junction abilities like HP, Vitality, Spirit, that all your GFs have to offer. And then you have level 8 characters worth 4,000 HP because you are able to find a stack of 100 regens from Mesmer cards and then put them on your character. This game is so broken, Alexander.
I need to decide now if I'm going to pivot my strategy into actually doing this. Are you doing this?
Of course I am. It's so fun.
I'm kind of enjoying being like, oh, I got to cast blind on that guy. Oh, I got to like be careful. He doesn't attack.
I junction blind to one attack or whatever. No, it's still fun. Like, don't get me wrong. It's just they didn't think this system through at all.
The card conversion. I didn't even notice what that ability did. That's so funny.
So, yeah. Of course you didn't, because the game gives you, at the start, a bunch of unskippable tutorials that are all essentially the same thing. And then it completely glosses over what all of your abilities on your guardian forces do.
Yeah, they're all just like element attack up. But I'm like.
And it's all abbreviated okay. And weird and like old Sega Genesis RPG style. Like, what the fuck is any of this mean? I don't have the instruction booklet with me. I mean, I do, thankfully. It's here. There's a mini walkthrough as well.
Hmm.
So it'll like, what the heck? Oh my God, I got a place postage here.
What are these?
Like, Squaresoft game tips. I pulled out the CD jewel here, and there's a paper stapled insert where you can dial a 900 number 1-900-407-KLUE to get game tips on your Squaresoft game.
I love to get a clue.
What is this? And you can like submit a user feedback, and they're saying like, which Squaresoft games do you own? What is your favorite type of game? What factors influence you the most when purchasing a game? Write in if you did that, because that's interesting. I wonder what came of it. Oh, there's also advertising for Chocobo's Racing and Chocobo's Dungeon too.
Should we call that number on the episode?
No.
Right now?
You know why? It says right below it, 95 cents a minute automated tips, 125 a minute live assistance.
I will Venmo you.
No, that number, there's no way that number is active, because Squaresoft isn't active anymore. Square Enix, whatever. There's a whole bunch of cool stuff. There's all these like the 6-inch hero figurines. If you have any of the 6-inch hero figures that are in this CD jewel here, you could take a look there.
I don't have any of those.
Take pictures and send them in our Discord. You can find the links in the description. I haven't looked in that in ages.
Should we talk about the story?
Yeah, we'll get into that. There's the three discs. I got the whole... this game comes in... Oh, four discs. That's right. But it's mostly three discs, and then disc four is like the end game. There's a lot to talk about with this story. You start off as Squall, a moody teenager in a military academy called Balam Garden. You're training to become a seed.
I will say, I watched the opening cutscene, and my immediate reaction was, oh, so this is to blame for Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, sure, why not? I mean, it's Tetsuya Nomura. The opening cutscene is, of course, Squall and Cypher's iconic duel, where they give each other the forehead scars, because they're besties. I don't necessarily want to recap too much, but basically we meet up with the overly forward and flirty Quistis Trape, who is our instructor and has groupies.
Yeah, seems like a mercenary academy.
It's not military. Mercenary, hired mercenary academy. Sure, it's a fighting school. Whatever.
One of the earliest examples of that trope, I think. I was trying to dig into this. I don't like. As distinct from a military academy where you train officers, the idea of a school where you learn to fight is not...
It's a school where you learn to fight for whatever clients you get.
Occasionally with a really shitty contract?
Occasionally, yeah. We eventually get ready for our seat exam. We are paired up with the overly emotional Zell, who is the de facto monk of this game. He was one of my least favorites as a kid, but playing through this now, I feel kind of bad for the doofus, because everyone's really mean to him.
He is.
But it's not, I don't know, Squall is just sort of the kind of person that's like, man, everyone around me is really stupid. And he's not wrong. Everyone is super incompetent in this fucking game.
That's the thing. People weren't overstating how much of like an antisocial prick Squall kind of is. Like anytime
anyone
is happy.
Yeah, but he has such a really good reason to be that way. Have you not seen the way his teacher keeps flirting with him?
Yeah.
Overly nastily flirting with him.
When she approaches at that party and she's like, you know, I'm only your instructor for one more night. Should we go to that?
So you're going to make out point in the garden? This is an order from your instructor. What the fuck? And then when he's like, okay, cool. She's like, they told me I lacked leadership qualities. I'm like, you think? You think so?
I am quite enjoying the story of this so far. The gender politics of this game are iffy.
Oh, yeah. Quistis, Selphie, and Renoa are female. The just heightened best example of female characters written by men of the 90s.
Yes, they really are. It's just they don't get a whole lot of being to be people is the problem. They're all kind of like affectation and like performance. And
but we've got a lot of time to spend with these. Yeah, we've got a lot of time to spend with these people. So we'll see how their story kind of develops and unfolds. Did you spend a lot of time in the terminal when at the very beginning of the game, because we're in school? Did you go to your desk and look at all the stuff?
Yeah, I read all the tutorials. Mm-hmm. I ran around. Like, I mean, I spent time running around. I checked out like the mess hall. And
so
the...
we didn't mention GFs too much. This school employs a system of assigning GFs to children. That's so weird. It doesn't necessarily explain what GFs are, but they're called guardian forces.
It took
they
a
sound
while
like
for me.
Girlfriends.
Yes. All the jokes are it's
they
very easy
themselves.
To make all the jokes about like getting a GF.
Yeah, a GF. I
rubbed the magic lamp and out of it I got a goth GF.
Yeah. Big titty goth GF and the magic lamp. Man, so we run the seed exam. We're paired up with Zell and Cypher, of course. Cypher's
a hothead.
Cypher's a super hothead.
Cypher wants to kill people maybe a bit
so
too much.
What's so interesting is that in any other game, I think Cypher would be the actual protagonist.
Yes.
Because he's going against all the orders.
That's what I find interesting.
But in this game, it gets him into deep shit and it gets him held back constantly. And because of the military, I think that's a really cleverly designed character, even if the things he says are weird.
Meanwhile, Squall
I'm going to tell you about my romantic dream.
Meanwhile, Squall is just kind of a guy of few words who just mostly does what he's told. And it's like, what is his motivation? Why does he want to be a mercenary? What is his history
he
here?
He wants to be left alone is his motivation. And frankly, after 17 years of living with the people in this school, I don't blame him. Like, yikes, everyone, like all of the people you talk to are just weird.
They're very strange.
It's I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but it works and it's funny. This game is really funny because everyone's really weird, but Squall is kind of the only somewhat reasonable person within arm's reach.
You know what it is? Here's what it is. It's a real thing that I think makes me bounce off a lot of modern JRPGs. Mm-hmm. There are characters in this who are dumb. There are even characters in this who are a little annoying. No one in this game is obnoxious, at least so far. Like, not in the way of, like, that one companion character who you know is going to show up in any JRPG published after 2014.
I love Teddy. I love Teddy in Persona 4. He's okay, amazing.
Teddy is the last good one of those.
Yeah, Morgana sucks. That's a good point. It's a good point. No, there's no character like that. And much to this game's, I think, detriment, to be honest. Everyone is human, as far as we can tell in this universe, which is a little bit un-Final Fantasy. I quite enjoy a lot of the non-human characters, like Red 13 in Final Fantasy VII, and, you know, Quina and Vivi, and all the amazing people in Final Fantasy IX. I was trying to think about how we could fit Final Fantasy IX in because of Dawn Trail, but that'll have to wait.
We'll do it at some point.
Yeah. This game, we're coming back to it after Shadowbringers a while ago, and we'll see how that, where those two kind of come together.
Experiencing the quality of life stuff in these remasters has made me significantly game to do more of
these.
Yeah,
my God, so necessary.
Yeah, because hey, you know the GF summons? Not that long when you hit the triple X fast forward.
Oh yeah, the summons are cool to do once or twice, but in terms of getting actual damage in, you're much better junctioning off death to your magic stat and then just obliterating everyone with drawn spells. The draw system, by the way, is cool, and it's fun. It's cool and fun in a similar way to like Secret of Mana, where I'm like, I'm super down to sit and just draw 100 spells from a bunch of things, much in the same Secret of Mana, Secret of Evermore, much in the same way I'm down to hit a bunch of crab skeletons to make my spear level 3. Like, I'm super down for that simple level of grind that's going to give me a power boost for the next few chapters until I get stronger magic and I get to do it again. I am 100% down to do that. And I'm also down to turn a bunch of monsters into cards and turn those cards into items. The plot of this game completely goes hand in hand with the ridiculous nature of the character and character customization and stat system of the and the RPG systems, which is why I think people really, really love this game. It is a fun, stupid, bad game.
I was gonna say, fun. People like my impression has always been this is kind of the black sheep, at least of this run, right? Like my impression, people are always like, oh, Squall is so mopey. Oh, Final Fantasy VIII, that's not one of the good ones.
I think there are a lot of haters out there. I wouldn't consider myself a hater. I just am like, this one's weird, you guys.
It's very weird.
It's so weird, but it's really fun. It doesn't, because it's, again, it's not like weird and hard, because it's weird and it lets you break the system in a way that I wouldn't say makes me feel smart, but it still is satisfying, similar to being like, I don't really want to do this puzzle. I'm going to fly over it in Breath of the Wild, you know, in like the shrines where you're just like, Tears of the Kingdom, where you're like, fuck that. And you just summon your damn helibike and just go over the castle.
I am always going to be down for a game that lets you kind of break it a little bit, because it just it feels good to just be able to kind of steamroll it, because you're like, I did the work to make this happen.
Yeah, for sure. So the mission and Dalit, I think, is really fun and iconic, as an iconic series of events, particularly where we meet Selfie Nunchuck Girl and Cypher runs off and we fight Biggs and Wedge at the top of the tower with the flying helicopter thing and the chase sequence with the spider. Very fun. I love that stupid spider chase sequence. Real easy to take down with lightning magic, though. But then there's the series of cutscenes where you're running through Dalit. And the beach cutscene is fucking awesome. Both the D-Day like beach cutscene where you're landing on,
and then
Quistis with the machine gun.
Well, and even the bit at the top of the tower where the wrench falls down, and then all of a sudden it circles around. Yeah, it's all really
and
good
The cutscenes in this game are absolutely cinematic and really fun to watch.
Hey, you know what I think benefits this game a lot?
What?
No voice acting.
Oh, for sure. For now, if they do a remake, I think the voice acting in 7 remake is actually really good. But currently, yes. If thankfully there's no voice acting circa 1999.
Well, and just like, but, okay, I like JRPGs. I do. But there is a problem that a lot of games have. JRPGs very much often included, where as soon as you introduce voice acting, like you have like the cutscene problem of like, what are you doing over there?
I think there's
I'm coming into the room.
I think there's a lot. I think there's sort of the Xenoblade Chronicles 1 benchmark of voice acting.
Yeah.
Like if it's that was, I think, one of the first really, really good ones. I know that a lot of the Tales games had voice acting. I didn't think they were particularly good. And there's a lot of repetitiveness. And I think Xenoblade in particular stands out as one that has the repetitiveness but is iconic.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's not just like the quality of the voice acting, it's the way it's cut together, right?
Yeah.
It's like not having awkward pauses between lines and not having the camera have to pan slowly for like 3 seconds while someone finishes a line. Like this game can go bing bang boom, you read the text, it cuts
yes,
to the cutscene,
and it's funny
to
too because it's just it lets the punches sort of just roll in. There's a lot there. Once we finish the Dalit, moving forward, the Dalit thing, we graduate Seed. Cypher does not, but he congratulates us. He's not a horrible person, actually, though he is kind of our foil.
If
we
anything,
get sent
Cypher
off on a stupid, stupid, freaking awful. We to do the dance cutscene, which is also fun, in which we meet a really, really pushy girl, who is trying to get our attention. Named, we don't know her name yet, but this is Renoa. And we have the dance with her. She says something like, "You're going to like me," which at the bar, I would be like, "Goodbye."
It's so funny that Squall is just sitting in the corner with his drink.
I mean, that's what I do. I'm just like, fuck it. I'm just here for the noise. It's like, whatever. But I think there's certain aspects of Squall's personality that are really well written. One of which is that, like, a lot of the times his monologue is internal, but he eventually pipes up and pretty quickly and says things like, I don't want to have to rely on other people, or I don't want to have to deal with other people's problems or things like that, which to me suggests that he is actually looking for connection and is struggling with that. based on his feelings of loneliness, and he eventually relents and dances with Renoa. Whereas I, as a 35-year-old man, am not as interested in that. I have my friendships and things like that. I don't need people coming up to the bar trying to be like, "You're going to like me," and I'm like, "You're gonna like this drink in your face."
Well, and like, and there's something also about like the way that the cutscene looks. I know that it literally happens, but it feels almost a little dreamlike, mm-hmm. in a way that like that makes like Squall feels like he is constantly sort of like, I don't know, just like he's a little like one step sort of removed from mm-hmm. what's happening in his life, in a way that I'm interested to see sort of like,
yeah,
where that goes and like where this that kind of like collides into something.
So after the dance, we are assigned a 3-man mission to go liberate a nation. I'm not kidding. It's in the contract.
Wait, do we have the dream sequence first?
Yeah, well, we're assigned on this thing, and then on the train over,
right,
we are knocked the fuck out by something, a ringing noise. We also learned that Selfie likes trains a lot. That's her personality quirk. She's overly naive and likes trains a lot.
I mean, honestly, same.
Good
so,
for her.
Okay, representation.
Yeah, representation matters. Then, oh, fuck, this is the best fucking thing about this entire game are these dream sequences. I'm
really
not kidding. These are awesome.
Man,
are so good. All of our characters have the same dream in which they are following around the coolest fucking people ever. Laguna,
really?
Kairos, and Ward.
Laguna's gonna have to grow a little bit, because right now
Laguna
he just seems like
is
a dolt.
total wiener. I love him so much, but he's so fucking awesome. I don't know. So these are 3 Galbadian army soldiers, and the Galbadia is like the enemy nation, but like this is when they're at war with the mighty Timber army, which is a stark contrast to what we experience. So something's going on there. They are, instead of fighting, running the fuck away. And abandoning their posts and in the jungle and just like running. So first off, Laguna, Kairos, and Ward, right? They're these 3 soldiers, and they are this. Laguna's just a dude with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And the battle theme also distinctly changes, right? If we're no longer hearing the typical 5-4 battle music that we heard, and we also heard in Final Fantasy 14, we are instead treated to the theme song, the song The Man with the Machine Gun, which is the fucking coolest battle music ever.
That's a good name for
it's
it.
It's so good. Ward has a giant fucking spear and a giant fucking harpoon that he just throws at people, and he says nothing. He's completely silent. And Kairos is just sort of a smart aleck dude with a cool smart aleck dude with katars. And they're running away. They head back to Dealing City to see Julia perform. Julia Caraway. Interestingly enough. She is at the piano performing in the bar that they're at, and the other 2, Kairos and Ward, pressure Laguna to finally go up and talk to him. And as soon as he does that, his leg cramps. He like gets up to the stage,
yeah,
walks up, his
okay,
looks
okay
at her in the eyes, his leg cramps up, and he's like, and just hobbles away like a pathetic piece of shit. I love him so much. He's so fucking funny. Then he heads back to his seat, and he's like, "Well, I did my best." And they're like, "Well, you made progress." That's progress. And before the conversation goes on, the performance ends, and from off screen, Julia walks in, and the other 2, Kairos and Ward, are like, "This one's on us," and they abandon him. And Laguna's like, "What the hell?" And he turns around, and of course, as soon as he notices Julia's there, his leg cramps up again. And they get to talking, and Julia seems to be pretty interested in Laguna, because he keeps being really nice and coming to her shows, and she's noticed him. And before the conversation could continue, she asks if they can go somewhere more private, which of course Laguna says, "Oh man, oh, that's so scary. Why would we do that?" And she says, "Well, it would be easier to have a conversation without prying eyes." And the camera pans out, and there's all like 6 people just like huddled around the table staring at this entire dream sequence is so fucking funny. And Laguna's like, "Man, I'm not going to talk about myself the whole time." And as soon as he gets a sip of wine,
yeah,
in him,
no, that's the thing.
He just like rattles on about himself for 3 hours.
And then she's like, I see something in you. Will you be my muse? And I'm like, what? Why this guy?
I love it. People love it when, like, somebody they're slightly interested talks about the things that they're passionate about. And he was talking about, like, his dreams and stuff to her. I don't know. People like that. They'll tend to like that when I do it. I don't know. That's why we have this frickin' podcast.
Okay.
So... yeah, absolutely. She comes up with the song and the dream sequence ends before long. And the three of them wake up and they're like, they have very different impressions of Laguna. Squall is like, that dude sucks ass. And Sophie's like, he's awesome.
Squall says, I dreamt I was a moron. And I was like, oh, me too, buddy.
This time I'm on Selfie's side. this guy rules. I love these sequences with all of my heart. There's an alternate world where the entirety of Final Fantasy VIII is just that guy's story, and I think that game would have been awesome.
Would it? Or would you have just been like eating like a giant bowl of ice cream? Like,
oh man,
do you think it's
maybe?
We'll see.
Maybe. I think. I don't know. I love how much you love
these sequences. I'm going into the second one now, so we'll see.
After that, we wake up in Timber, we meet up with Rinoa again, and we learn about their plan to steal the president.
God, it's so... okay, this is a bit where I'm like, it's so funny. It's a resistance cell of
wild.
Three people. It's
and they hired three mercenaries.
Three incompetent resistance fighters.
Hey, hold on. They came up with a plan that worked.
Okay. I shouldn't say incompetent. Three inexperienced resistance fighters. Incompetence harsh. And yeah. Through the three mercenaries they hired and their insane
and
plan
they're all
to 17. Kidnap a train.
To hijack a train. We hijack the train by decoupling two of the middle cars and then replacing them with two dummy cars, and then at the other junction
pairing the other car to our car so that we can drive our train off with the real
president. There's a couple of action sequences on top of this train, action stealth sequences that are brief, thankfully brief, but still pretty tense. We successfully kidnap the president, or do we?
It turns out he was a decoy.
They saw us coming, and this dummy president turns into a giant nemesis blob from RE3 for no reason.
It's genuinely freaky the way the president model starts to like flail around as it begins sinking into
the
ground.
What the fuck? There is no explanation for this, by the way.
And it's at this point that we discover that a major plot point of this game is TV transmission technology.
Yes, so the satellite at Dalet, has been defunct. It's the only satellite in the world that uses radio. The rest of them just use the internet, I guess, or HD cables, they say.
I'm so curious what the AV technology landscape is.
AV technology no longer exists. Or no longer is in function. This world is regressing because of this 1,000-year sorceress war that we're only seeing this sort of tail end of here. They want to use Timber's TV station to broadcast something to the entire planet that is otherwise not possible for reasons unknown. And we are going to try and run in there and stop them. And as soon as we get up to the station...
well,
the broadcast starts.
Rinoa wants to run in there and stop them. Squall is immediately like, what's covered by our contract? We helped you get the train.
Oh, yeah. We helped to get the train. Turns out the contract was these three seed members are going to help you until Timber regains independence. And Selfie immediately is like, that is so vague.
What does that mean?
What does that mean? What the fuck?
What the hell, Sid?
And we're like, all right, I guess client's a client, whatever. I mean, Squall has... repeatedly and demonstrably not questioned orders thus
whatever
far.
I'm getting 3,000 gold every
I'm getting 6,000
minutes. Oh yeah, 'cause how do you level up?
Well, you get a higher seed rank if your ifrit timer was lower, and then also if you do better on the Dalet mission and other stuff.
Oh,
and then my seed rank went up because I did really good on the train mission too.
Oh, it's literally grading you on like
yes.
How you complete.
Yes, so the more money you get, your salary. It depends on how good you do.
That's really cool, but I'm kind of pissed about it.
Well, you can always refine monsters into cards and then sell the things that the cards make to make money.
Okay.
Money's
anyway.
Infinite in this game, too. Anyway, yes.
Talk about the brief moment of child abuse as we're on our way to the TV station?
Which one of those?
When you go up to the window to look in the alley and the kid tries to charge you 10 gil for the right, and then the mom walks up and just starts
hitting
him.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole lot. There's a whole lot of traumatic things that happen to children in this game. Once we make it up to the TV station, the broadcast begins, and it is crashed by none other than Cypher, who apparently somehow found out that the Garden sent three kids on a mission to liberate a nation, and was like, fuck that, I'm going to help them.
Cypher believes in direct action. Cypher believes in killing the president.
Cypher believes in, holding the president hostage at the very least. We go, and Quistis is there because she's, I don't know, tried to stop him and is really bad at it, at anything. I don't know. So we get up. Once we get up there, we confront Cypher, and Zell says, are you going to take him back to Garden? And we're like, God, you dumbass.
Before that, really quick, I think worth saying, the president's address is how he wants to have a global peace conference, but his ambassador is going to be a sorceress.
Yeah, his ambassador.
So
well,
I don't know what that means.
It means he's going to put an end to this war once and for all. Sort of, you know.
That sounds positive.
Yeah, see? Selfie was right. He wants peace. Anyway, yeah, whatever. Sorry, I sound like Squall there for a second. We get up, crash them Zell blabs that we're from Garden. Surely that will not have any ramifications. And before we could do anything with the president, Cypher kind of absconds with him and runs into the back where there is a tall white sheet, a sheer sheet, and out from which steps the sorceress herself.
She beguiles Cypher, it seems like.
Yes, she casts an enchantment spell on the rest of us as well, so that we can't approach her. We kneel down in fealty to her presence, and she takes Cypher back through the sheet.
And then they're gone.
And then they're gone. This game is weird. So try not to look at this whole series of events with too close of a lens, or you'll realize that, man, really? This mercenary academy didn't instill any sort of decorum into Zell and graduated this kid so that he wouldn't blab about who their clients and things were?
I have a lot of questions about how Seed works, Seed is allowed to operate.
And how did Cypher find out about this mission? Who told him that? He was apparently in the infirmary at the time, so he was just sick, and Quistis was like, by the way, all your classmates got sent off on a top secret mission to liberate Timber.
I mean, on a certain amount of this is gonna be like melodrama rules, right?
Yes.
Like he wakes up and someone by his side is like, oh good, you're awake, but they've already left, and he's like, they've already left, and he charges out or something.
By the way, this Cid sucks ass.
Yeah.
This Cid is such a wiener compared to Final Fantasy XIV Cid or most other Cids in the franchise. This guy's kind of an asshole sending kids off to suicide missions. What the hell? What's his deal? And why did he tell that one kid that graduated with us, do your best even if you don't stand out that much? What the fuck, dude? You're such an asshole. This kid sucks wiener. He's just awful. And not in a fun, good way. He uses teeth.
No.
Well, I think that's about it for where we ended, because we end off there and we have to come up with a new plan of action.
Yeah, my last note here is everyone hopes that Cypher is alive except for Squall, who is pretty sure he's already dead and thinks the others are kind of stupid.
All right. I mean, that's conflict. That's inter-party conflict right there. Well, all right. That's going to do it for our first chunk of Final Fantasy VIII. We are going to continue on until the end of Disc 1, which is after the procession in Dealing City, I believe. So that was where I thought we were going to end up the first time, and I'm glad I looked at the length of the game and sort of the chapters of it on the line beforehand, because I was like, oh no, there's a lot more game than I realized between this part and then the next part. So we're going to do that. We're going to finish Disc 1 and talk about that alongside next week's game, Bully. Rockstar,
yes, right.
Controversial mid-2000s game Bully. Excited to get into that one. We also, next episode, will be able to reveal what game we are going to play for our poll and our Discord, which you can join by the link in the description. The link in the description also contains our other socials and our email. If you want to reach out to us for anything, you could go ahead and do that. That's great. We'll probably answer, especially the email and the Discord. Those are real easy for us. I don't think I have anything to say apart from the music in this game is probably the best music of any Final Fantasy. I think Uematsu really hit the mark on this in this game in general.
Should we pull a few specific tracks for next episode? Maybe listen to them?
No.
Okay.
Listen, you've already heard a couple of tracks because they're in the Final Fantasy XIV soundtrack.
That's a fair point.
We heard the, were you like, oh yeah, I know that song when the battle theme and then like the overworld theme popped up?
I mean, in the sense
and
that
then,
like
and then
all
the boss music.
In the sense that like all Final Fantasy music is all other Final Fantasy music, sure.
No, it's not. What the fuck? That's so offensive. How the fuck? Anger engagement is engagement. Good job. Good thing to say. Really piss everyone off.
It's good music.
It's fantastic, but it's not all the same. It's just, I guess we played Shadowbringers a while ago, so you're not going to notice.
It's not top of mind. Sorry.
You're not one for noticing motifs.
I'm also not good at music.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, you could do a little dive on your own and see what music themes pop up and whatever the hell. Whatever. It's fine. That's fine. I'll be sure to point out some of the more important things that they reused as we play the game. And you'll be like, yes, I definitely remember that.
Definitely.
So that's going to do it for our discussion this week. That was a lot of fun. We're looking forward to continuing to play Final Fantasy VIII alongside other school games. And I have been your teacher of light, Jerome Barbatsis, joined by my co-teacher of light, Alexander Hambrock. Class dismissed.
Pizza sticks for lunch.
Dude, those like wide garlic bread things with the honk of Colby Jack on them for some reason. Those were top tier. I think it was called Italian Day. I remember now.
My school had a dedicated pizza line, like a dedicated, like it's like some little separate
yes,
room actually.
We did too.
And like half the time it was like good local pizza from like an actual like local pizzeria, and half the time it was like slabs of thick dough that had what tasted like tomato pasta sauce on top, mm-hmm. and then the worst half melted cheese on top of that.
Wow.
And just I don't know, some days are good pizza days and some days are bad pizza days.
Apparently the hot dogs in Balham Garden are fucking top tier. We don't get to have any of them though.
No,
because every time we go and look, they're gone.
It's upsetting.
They're certainly better than the hot dogs we got at my school.
Good night.
Bye.